Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tom Thayer.
Oh, no!
Chicago Bears radio analyst.
That's him.
Don't you think you'd practice at home flipping it a couple times, make sure you get it right? It's like a referee in basketball making sure you throw that jump ball up straight.
Tom Thayer, 1985 Super Bowl champion.
We are the Bears, shuffling crew, shuffling on down.
Tom Thayer.
The Dog Bird!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is an honor to share the airwaves with Tom Thayer and the Bears radio analyst, local legend, local guy made great. He joins us on the El Pamonte Ford Hotline, El Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Tom!
Hey, Tom.
Your introduction is the best laugh of the day, Mike.
Hey, how awesome was that last night, huh? That was like the real deal. You saw all of the stuff that everyone was kind of expecting since the start of the season. You saw Mitch operating at his best on the move. A lot of fun to watch that game.
You know what? You said it exactly right. It's everything that we and all Bears fans have been expecting since the Green Bay game to start the season. It's nice that it's gotten here because there's been a lot of examples of interruption of development throughout the course of the season. However, when you look at it the last 2.5, 3.5 weeks, you can see development, significant development out of the quarterback position. You can see development in guys that are repeatedly used, like Anthony Miller. We're starting to see a glimpse of if this team on the offensive side of the ball, if they have an aggressive tight end position, what it means for the rest of the game plan. Both throwing the ball, deception at the line of scrimmage, and opportunities for David Montgomery. So, yeah, you know, it took a while for the Bears to get here, but we finally saw, you know, the results of what playing their type of game can get from them.
Tom, you and Jeff talked all week about how this game to you could serve as the same purpose in prime time against a good opponent at Soldier Field in 2019, the way that beating the Rams a year ago in the same building had on that season. Do you think that is a possible, you know, response to this? Do you think that could be the result of what happened last night, that they use that as a catalyst?
You know, next week we'll tell the answer to that, because if they go into Green Bay and they're intimidated by the greatness of Aaron Rodgers, if they can't move the ball against that defense, which they weren't able to week one of the season, then we're all going to go back to square one. And that's the unfortunate thing about it. However, if Akeem Hicks comes back and he can be, you know, fulfill everything that we know of what Akeem Hicks can do from the defensive line, if now we start getting Khalil Mack and Leonard Floyd get sacks because of the presence of Akeem Hicks, you know, I will have to figure out what's wrong with Roquan Smith, but is Danny Trevathan possibly in the mix of coming back? So there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, but you know, I'm kind of a realist in the appreciation for the greatness of Aaron Rodgers. Anytime the Bears are getting ready to go to Green Bay or Green Bay's going to play down here, it's all about what they can do to limit the success of Aaron Rodgers and expose more opportunities now to Mitchell Trubisky from what we've seen out of those last, you know, few weeks of his performance.
We talked this morning about a lot of the hidden performances, a lot of the guys that came in and maybe weren't as appreciated but managed to play pretty well. Let's start with the offensive line, an area of specialty for you, Tom. Normally when you start a season with five guys and you're down two of them, you got huge problems. And yet I thought they really came around and had a heck of a night.
Yeah, you know, the two is the Rashad Coward, for example. You know, when I first saw him move from offensive tackle to offensive guard with super to limited to no experience, you never knew was it going to be so big for him from the first week on that he's not going to be able to recover and go on to week two, three, four, and five? And he's been able to do that. And you know what? And it's not a slight to Kyle Long, because Kyle Long didn't have a great deal of football playing experience. I know he's in and out of the Pro Bowl, both at the tackle and guard position, but sometimes his inexperiences hurt the offensive line as much as anybody. Yeah, Rashad can also have some experience that hurt him, but he's also been able to develop with such continuity that he is better from 1 week to the next, whether it's a display of athleticism, using his length, his bendability at the offensive guard position, and then to be able to work next to Cornelius Lucas, that they don't have very much time together, and he doesn't have very much playing experience, but in their preparedness, their preparedness mentally, it makes them, allows them to play more aggressively physically, because they understand what they're doing for every play, pass, run, protection, or any other of their responsibilities.
Tom, I think it'll require looking at the game again to get a better sense of the answer to this question. But after that first drive, 17 plays that ate up so much of the first quarter, the Cowboy offense looked dominant and the Bears defense adjusted. How did they adjust, or what did they do to get back in that game? Because after that, it was a pretty good effort by the defense.
Yeah, you know, kind of, well, you know, you go through that first drive, then you have a chance to make some adjustments on the sideline after that according to personnel groupings. And I think that gave Chuck Pagano a better understanding of what they're going to do with certain people in the game. Then you also knew that there was no backup running back for Ezekiel Elliott. There's a couple of guys that could come in and fit the position, but they really weren't going to play like Ezekiel Elliott. So was it as much as having, you know, when Roquan Smith got hurt, and now you got Nick Kwiatkowski in there along with Kevin Pierre-Louis, but then they made adjustments where they played a five-man front, three down defensive linemen in their stance, and then Leonard Floyd and Khalil Mack on the outside with the middle linebacker, which gave them less efficiency on the offensive line, where they weren't going to be able to attach a lot of time to double teams to try to get to the second level. They had to try to make blocks on the offensive line and provide open spaces. They were able to do it in small increments, but when the Bears got themselves into an obvious down, a third and long, a second long, then they were able to kind of force Dak Prescott to throw the ball to a certain area, playing press coverage with Kevin Tolliver, and backing off a little bit in a sure tackler with Kyle Fuller. You're going to make some completions in front of them, but you're not going to make that big explosive play completion. So I think really the more you make Dallas work, the harder it is for them to be long-term successful. Although that 17 play drive was as impressive of a drive as much as the defense did in stopping the offense after that 17-play drive.
Yeah, we were talking to Biggsy about it and laughing, the idea that the scripted plays were all used up on that drive.
Right.
They had nothing left.
It's unusual, you know, because I was paying more attention in that first drive of how much they were using Ezekiel Elliott, and to see if he'd be able to maintain that level going into the late second into the third and fourth quarters, if he was going to be able to absorb that much abuse and still keep, you know, a fresh look about himself. And I do think the defense took a toll on him a little bit, and, you know, then they were put them in some obvious down and distance. And I think Coach Pagano and Coach Nagy, for that matter, you know, they both called a really well-schemed a game last night.
Tom, it was obvious that Mitch Trubisky came there prepared to run the football against a defense that had been susceptible to giving up yards to quarterbacks. It's easy to overstate that. Is okay, they freed Mitch up to do what he needed to do, and his athleticism took over, and Matt Nagy had this revelation. How did you see it? Why do you think that was last night of all, you know, we've been waiting for this to happen? Why did it happen now?
Because, you know, if you take and you look at the past few games of the Dallas Cowboys, you know, Rod Marinelli and the defense, they put so much emphasis on rushing the passer that they forget about their responsibilities of tackling a running back. And I do think that sometimes these guys, for the Dallas Cowboys, they get in these track stance and they burst up field with their head down, and all of a sudden they're not paying attention to either deception or what's going on in the backfield, and then you see the ball, you know, being handed to David Montgomery, and they have some awareness. But it's the perfect time that the defensive ends had no respect for Mitchell Trubisky's willingness to run it from this point, so they didn't respect it at all coming into this game. And then you look at their rush paths were opening opportunities for Trubisky, and at the right times, he was taking advantage of that. Now, you think going forward, will they spy Mitchell Trubisky next week in Green Bay to keep those types of runs out of the threat of what it can do when he is successful at it? And will they try to encourage Mitchell Trubisky to throw the ball downfield rather than running it for those first downs? And, you know, it's going to be an element of development that Matt's going to be faced with going into next week, because now it's going to be a high alert of watching Trubisky run the ball to help their offense.
Tom, thanks a ton. Really appreciate
it. Thanks, Tom.
Hey. All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
That's Tom Thayer, Bears radio analyst.
He's exactly right.
Man extraordinaire.
Packers are probably going to adjust. But you know what the difference is now playing the Packers for Mitch Trubisky than at the beginning of the season and the season opener? He's got 13 games, or at least, I guess, 12 of experience. And he's got some confidence going into this game he didn't have going into the season opener.
And that Rodgers has run out of luck.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm planning my take for next Friday show.
You go with that, okay?
With the
see how far that takes you.
With our friends up in Milwaukee.
So basically, Mully says Bears have edge at quarterback.
Easily. Didn't you see last week? All right. We're going to bring Joe Fortenbaugh in next. It's Mully and Haw. Want to tell you that our visit with Tom Thayer live, brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Built Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. Mully and Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's time for Joe Fortenbaugh. He's our man in Vegas by way of the Bay Area, 95.7 The Game. And, of course, you see him on the Daily Wager on the Four Letter Network. Joe joins us on the El Pamonte Ford Hotline, El Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Guys, what year is it? I feel like I woke up. You moved me up to 720. I feel like it's 1985. What is going on in the city of Chicago? I know it was closer last night, but I was going back through the 85 Bears this morning. 44-0. Chicago beat Dallas back in 1985.
Oh,
it
yeah.
felt like that last night at Soldier.
Not quite like that,
no,
Joe, but it was
better
fun.
Than
it
that.
Was a lot of fun to watch. It was.
And the Bears
that's
are...
it. No, you go all the way in. I don't want to hear any other talk. Go all the way in. Keep going to the playoffs.
Yeah, they're going to the Super Bowl, okay?
It's amazing for all the adversity, and this is where you have to credit an organization that can go one of two ways at this point in the season. The New York Jets looked like they got something going and then immediately laid the egg at Cincinnati. We see this in sports every single year. You reach that precipice, that point of no return where you're either in or you're out. And it doesn't mean you're going to win or lose every game, but it's just the buy-in you get from the players and the organization. And it's never looked pretty. With Chicago, it's probably never going to look pretty with this team. But what is that 4-5 or 3-4? They found a way. They just continue to find ways. And the best part about it is they're playing exciting games. These are watchable games. Thanksgiving against Detroit, coming back to win that game. Last night, hammering the Cowboys, which I think most of America outside of Cowboys fans loves to see. The product is entertaining right now. You got to love it.
They're doing all they can to keep Philadelphia in this thing, Joe. You should just notice that.
Well, let me
buddy.
Tell you something about that. Philadelphia has a very elaborate plan in place. I was told by sources inside the organization I wasn't going to let this out, but I love you guys, so I'm going to tell you this. The Eagles know that they are not a Super Bowl team this year. So what they are doing is intentionally losing so Jones – will keep Garrett at the helm in the future, and the Cowboys can never take any steps forward.
Makes sense. That makes sense, Joe. Thanks for sharing that.
There it is. Everyone wants to know what's going on with the NFC East. There it is. The Eagles can't win the Super Bowl, but they need Jason Garrett to continue screwing things up. So if the Cowboys win the division, Garrett stays in place.
Joe Fortenbaugh has learned.
All right, let's get to the fun weekend of football. I mean, this is a great weekend of college football. I don't know if it's a great weekend. I don't see a lot of directional schools that I want to jump on.
No, not at all. Bowl season's right around the corner, fortunately for the directional schools. We'll have plenty of that in the future. I've been going through this. These lines have been hammered into submission. So at this point, there's really only one game where you're going to find a little bit of value, and I'm going to get to that game in a little bit. I'm going to start with tonight's game, Oregon and Utah. It's here in my backyard. It's going to be in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium. The weather's not going to be good for this game. The total opened around 50. It's down to 46. This game opened with Utah as low as a 2-point favorite. It's now up to 6.5. I would tell you this. If it gets to 7, I would play Oregon. That's the only way I'd look at it. There's not a whole lot I love about this game, but when you muck up the weather and you give me a pretty good quarterback in Justin Herbert and the Ducks, we saw Mario Cristobal prepare this team for Auburn early in the season. They blew it, yes, but they did play very well in a big spot. I would say if you're going to give me 7 in the bad weather against Utah, I'll go ahead and take a shot on that. So that's where I stand with that game right now. It's still kind of iffy with some of these games as to which direction I'm going to go. I can tell you I will push my chips in with Baylor at +9 against Oklahoma. I'm hoping the 10 comes up. I don't think it will. If it does, I'll be there as well. Baylor had that game against the Sooners a few weeks ago, and they blew it, obviously. I think that helps them coming back into this game. They're right back where they started. They're right back where they started, essentially controlling their own destiny. Now, I don't think a win – I'm pretty sure a win's not going to be good enough to get them into the college football playoff. But everything Matt Rhule as a head coach has done this year with this program at Temple, the guy is incredible. Like, he's going to write his own destiny and his future as to where he wants to go. He's incredible. You're going to give him 9 points in the game. I very much think they can win. I know the team believes they can win. And I think this is inflated due to just the Oklahoma fatigue of regular season success. We all have come to know and love Oklahoma as this really good team, but they never actually seal the deal and finish the job. They get to the big stage, and then they get their teeth kicked in by the better opponents. So I'll take the 9 points with Baylor in that spot. Clemson, I'm laying it. There's not a whole lot I got to tell you there. I'm laying those points. The only thing that worries me is the back door, because Clemson is in the college football playoff with a win, no doubt. A loss, they still might get in, although that's where it gets a little bit dicey. They don't need style points here, but they have just been so good since that North Carolina game in late September that took them right down to the wire. 7 games since then, they've won all 7. They're 6-1 against the spread. They're beating the opposition by 41 points per game. They beat the opposition by 31 or more in all 7 of those games. And the defense has been incredible. They haven't let anyone score more than 14 since that game, and they're holding the opposition to just 8 points per game. Dabo Swinney is playing this disrespected card, and it's working. Ever since the first college football playoff standings came out, he's been talking about them being disrespected, and they have responded in kind. The only thing I worry about, like I said, they're up 35-42 late. They pull everybody, and then they go ahead and they let Virginia in the back door. But I would also play Clemson in the first half here. I think there's value in that situation. And I'm not too worried about Virginia. They just snapped a 15-game losing streak to Virginia Tech. Nobody cares about that series outside of those two teams. And Virginia finally got a win. So they're out partying like Minnesota beating Penn State, as if it matters. And they're going to try to turn around and get ready for Clemson. Congratulations on that. So I'll lay it with Clemson. I don't have much I'm doing with Wisconsin, Ohio State. I haven't played it. If I do, it's probably going to be Ohio State. I mean, Wisconsin's predicated on the ability to run the football with Jonathan Taylor. Ohio State can take that away from you in the opening 5 minutes of the game, not just with their defense, but by scoring 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So that's a scenario where we saw last year a lot of favorites ended up winning in these games. I'm leaning to a decent amount of favorites outside of Baylor. It brings us to the big one, the SEC Championship. This game is now up to 7 with LSU as the favorite. I can tell you this, LSU is going to be the side of the fans and the public. Georgia is going to be the side of the professionals. When it popped up to 7.5 at some spots, some of the pros were jumping all over it. They love Georgia's defense. They know Kirby Smart has been in this game before. There's a lot of analysis that leads to Georgia. That being said, I will not be following that. I'm going to go against that. I am going to play LSU. I don't think Georgia's defense is as great as everyone is saying. I was going through this last night. They have played no one to the caliber of LSU's offense. And Joe Burrow, we all saw this in that Alabama game, the guy's as cool as they come. If they can roll into Tuscaloosa and play like that, and I know Georgia's a different opponent, but if you can roll into that spot and perform to that level, I see you rolling into the SEC championship game and playing well as well. Now, a lot of people are leaning to the under here. LSU's got a good defense. Georgia's got that great defense. I'm not messing with it. I'm just letting you know. I think the pros are going to be lining up on Georgia. I'm going to take the shot with LSU. I think it's a huge step up in class with the Bulldogs. I don't think that offense is going to get a whole lot going on there. I would play LSU.
Quickly, Joe, a couple of NFL picks.
All right, I got four of them. I'm going to take the Niners plus the 2.5 at the Saints. The Niners thrive against statuesque quarterbacks. The quarterbacks that have hurt them, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray twice, and Lamar Jackson. That is not Drew Brees and the Saints, who have lost twice in the Dome this year. Most recently, they got beat up on by the Falcons, who sacked Brees, that was it, 5 or 6 times. I think the Niners win that game outright. This game is tailored to them. They stayed in Florida for it, so you don't have to worry about the travel or the time zones or anything like that. Take the 2.5 with San Francisco. I'm going to take the 2.5 with the Raiders as well, hosting Tennessee. I think you can get 3 at some spots. Great buy low spot on the Raiders. Teams are never as bad as they looked the week before. They're also never as good as they looked the week before. The Raiders have been good at home this season. By home, I mean the Coliseum. 4-1 straight up, 3-2 against the spread. Mike Vrabel and the Titans have been solid. This is just a pricing game right here. The Raiders should not be catching 3 in this spot. I'll play Oakland. I'm going to go under the total in Patriots, Kansas City. It's sitting at 49. The big bad Patrick Mahomes offense is rolling into Gillette. Look, Patriots off a loss. They might not win this game, but they are not going to let that offense tear them apart, especially with the defense they've got following what happened in Houston. Brady completing just 61% of his passes with a very low yards per attempt average. Some of the worst numbers he's posted in his career. I think the offenses are going to struggle here. Under 49, Patriots Chiefs. And then the fourth game, you're going to have the public lining up on the Seahawks Sunday night. You're going to have the professionals lining up on the Rams. This already went from Seahawks -3 on the road down to pick 'em. In fact, some Rams -1s are popping up. Seattle's a house of cards. They're 10-2, but they played 10 games that have been decided by one score, and they got the 10th best point differential. I know they look good on paper, but that's going to fall apart at some point. That's why we're betting the Rams here, boys.
Joe, you're the best. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Joe.
Love you guys. Congratulations on the win. I'll catch you next week.
It was us, too. I mean, we did. We influenced it.
We definitely had a lot to do with that one.
Olin Krutz will join us next.
He may have influenced.
He might have.
Well, I mean, really, if Olin tells you something, you just do it. You don't miss
yes.
it.
Yes.
Olin Krutz.
I'm going to tell you right now, I was at the game. I got to sit in the end zone, and I got to watch a lot of Hicks and Matt. And those two guys together, I'm going to tell you right now, Kat, I would not want to face those two animals.
Olin Krutz.
Kat, we were watching, and we were like, man, that is a tough defense to come in off the bench and face. It's turning out to be maybe the best pass rush in the whole NFL right now.
Olin Krutz.
If the offense ever does catch the defense, well, then we're going to be doing a Super Bowl show maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I think they'll come along, Kat. I think they will get better. How good, how quickly, that's anybody's guess.
Olin Krutz. Every week with Mully and Hall. He probably doesn't like you, but he loves to talk Bears with Mully and Hall.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. Every morning with Olin is like Christmas morning.
Doesn't he sound happy?
It is that time of year, season of giving, and Olin joins us on the El Pamonte Ford Hotline, El Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park.
Morning, Olin.
Good morning, Olin.
Morning, guys.
Wow.
How's it going, man?
I'll tell
you
what.
Put the ball in the end zone, right? How about that concept? Put the ball in the end zone at home. How about that concept?
How about coach to the strengths of your quarterback instead of his weaknesses? How about that
concept? Right, and just you know, so much credit goes to the Chicago Bears, but you could count when Roquan walked off the field, guys, they had 11 guys that you expected to contribute to their team this year, either on IR or on the sideline. And we could go through all the names, and you guys know who they are. And you got, then all of a sudden you got Kevin Pierre-Lewis, and you got Kwiatkowski, and you got Holtz and you got Cornelius Lucas and you got all these guys on the field, and the offense who's averaging 16 points a game at home. And if you take the Saints game and take the two late touchdowns out and you take out Cordarrelle Patterson's return, really, you know, hardly any touchdowns for the offense at home when it mattered. So a great day at the lakefront. The fans got to enjoy it, and we got to enjoy to watch an offense that we expected. And I heard Tom Thayer earlier that we expected to see versus the Green Bay Packers in week one.
So why did it come together last night, Olin, and why did we see Mitch Trubisky play with as much command and confidence as we have seen all season long?
And, you know, we're all going to guess why, but for me it started, you know, they took him out against the Rams for whatever reason. It felt like a benching. It seemed like it kind of pissed him off a little bit maybe, and he got to that podium after the Giants game, I think it was, and he started to say that they won the game, but hey, look, I didn't play good enough on offense. We're not playing good enough. And then he said he went down the list, guys, of what he thinks he does well, right? Get me out of the pocket, a little play action pass, a rollout, run the ball. And what he did right there was take ownership. He took ownership of the offense. He took ownership of the team. And look, last night we named the guys who were on the field, right? J.P. Holtz making plays. You know, Horsted making plays, Cornelius Lucas looking like a right tackle who can play in the NFL. Well, what you got there, and for only one night, we're not going too crazy, but what you got there is a guy you drafted number two in the draft, raising people's level, making them better, you know, making everybody around him better, organizing the front, drawing the Dallas defense off sides, right? Getting free yards. Lining up in a spread formation early and Nagy helping him in his helmet and line him up and finding whether it's zone or man and recognizing and get the ball out. And he's playing really good football. And, you know, Marinelli's defense, Rod Marinelli, former defense coordinator of the Chicago Bears, kind of perfect for where Mitch is, right? Because he's going to line up in what they do, and they're just going to do what they do and not really try to confuse you. And the Bears took advantage of that.
Cornelius Lucas is a giant. The guy is huge, and he's his arm length. Like I was watching him a little bit on some of those plays. He's just got like his arms are like, I don't know, the size of three men.
Yeah, and been playing really well when he has come in. And you think about even back to the Denver game when Bobby Massey, I think, had vertigo and he was out. Even Cornelius Lucas played a good game that week. So a really good signing by Ryan Pace to bring him in as a swing tackle. He's been playing really, really well. Offensive line performed well last night. And it goes to show you that, I possibly could be wrong about this this Cody Whitehair move. It seemed to settle Mitch down. I still think James should be center, but I can't argue with the results they had last night.
Olin, after Roquan Smith left the game, the Bears were down to a defense without four projected starters, Hicks, Trevathan, Roquan, and Prince Amukamara. Kevin Tolliver filled in pretty well. He wasn't noticed until the late touchdown in garbage time, but I thought that he acquitted himself, you know, pretty respectably.
It was a great throw, too.
And it was a great throw.
That was the best throw that guy made all night.
What did you like about the defense the most, and why were they able to thwart this Cowboys passing game?
Well, and what I liked about the defense and the Bears team the most last night was they give up that long drive, right? And Dallas throws a haymaker at them. And then, you know, Mitch throws that interception and they pick themselves back up off the mat and they go back and they just keep fighting. They just have to keep fighting the Dallas Cowboys last night because that offensive line is really good. Ezekiel Elliott is really good. And I think, you know, we all remember that after that first drive, the Bears shut him down. Not really true, right? I mean, Ezekiel Elliott rips off a 31-yard run late in the second quarter, so that defense just kept fighting. But really, a lot of credit goes to Pagano, and thank goodness for Kellen Moore and these young geniuses in the NFL, right? Because they're just not going to stick with their big offensive line and their run game and let them just run the ball. You know, even they get down there on the 5-yard line, of course, they're going to run some fancy option when you got Ezekiel Elliott, Zach Martin, Lyle Collins, Tyron Smith. But Coach Pagano really took more to school, I thought, adjusted his game plan, went to that 6-2 now that, you know, Fangio made famous, 6-1, bringing another D-lineman in the game, when they line up in 4-2 nickel with just four guys up front. The Dallas Cowboys were tearing him up with the run, so he switched up and went with five D linemen, took a linebacker out, went with five guys up front to stop the run. And Coach Pagano, a lot of credit to him and his group, but really Coach Pagano taking, I think what you saw last night, taking Kellen Moore to school. If I'm Garrett, I'm in a fist fight with Kellen Moore in the back in the locker room. I think he lost me my job.
That's awesome. I understand why. Rod Marinelli is running, a defense that certainly we saw here. And there is a statistic out there. If that team is on the field for 30 minutes or more, and they were on the field for 32 minutes, they are now 5-19. And it makes sense if you're going for speed over size and you're getting beaten up and you're just kind of wearing out as the game goes on. But why are they so susceptible? Those guys are quick. Why can't they? Mm-hmm. Why is it that a quarterback runs right up the gut against them? And it happened in the last three losses.
Well, if you take a look at what they had going on, and I don't want to make excuses for the Cowboys because we went through all our guys that were out, right? But Antoine Woods, their D tackle, was out. Keith, their strong safety, is kind of the quarterback of their defense, and he was out. And so you could see they had some problems with reads last night. But what they do on a zone read, and we've been talking about before how we need Mitch Trubisky to keep those zone reads to open up the run game, and they did last night. But they crash the end immediately, guys. They don't make you guess. So they just crash him immediately. He's going to play the running back. So with that defense, like I talked about, you know what they're going to do, right? And I think Nagy said at the podium after the game that we saw some things on the way they attacked our run that we liked with the quarterback keeping the ball. So the DN is going to crash. Rod Marinelli, they do what they do, right? And that linebacker is going to fold behind him and try to stop the quarterback run. So Charles Leno and Cornelius Lucas just worked their way up to the linebacker, made really good blocks. Obviously, they missed Vander Esch at that moment. They missed Keith out there. But look, like I just said, we had Cornelius Lucas up there blocking. So you got to credit the Chicago Bears for what they did last night, and they should enjoy that win. But like you guys know and I know, the guy up in Green Bay, Pettin, he's totally different than what Rod Marinelli is. You never know what he's going to give you. He's always trying to confuse you. So this is what you get in the NFL. You win a big game, and you prove that you can do it against one team, and now you got an even bigger game coming up, and you just keep taking steps. And I'm really excited to see this Mitch Trubisky-led offense and the way he's improved, guys, processing information on the field. Excited to see him against Green Bay and a Pettin-style defense, even though they're not playing well, kind of a defense that Mitch really struggles against with different looks, a little bigger DNs, right? Styles make fights. Styles always make fights. So bigger DNs, stronger guys, and it's going to be fun to watch the Bears. We have to enjoy this win for 10 days now and watch it play, hopefully, a meaningful game up there at Green Bay.
So let's zoom out, Olin. The Bears are on a three-game win streak. They've got three to go. Everybody will be aware and already about their slim percentage to make the playoffs. It increased last night to, I think, 5%. How is that addressed within the locker room? Is it at all addressed with among team leaders? And whenever the Bears get back to work, what's said, if anything?
Yeah, I think that what you saw last night is a team kind of finding their leaders, right, David? It's hard to say who they are because we're not in the locker room. But when you see a team fight like that at 6-6, what you just said with slim chances to get to the playoffs, that speaks to their character. Now, you got to give them credit for the way they went out there. And I know it's a nationally televised game, and this is what they're supposed to do. But to play what you would say on offense is their best game of the year at that point of the year, they got good leadership in that locker room, especially everything they've been going through. But look, you just say, like, we go out there and we just keep doing what we're doing. And we're playing the Green Bay Packers. That game always means something when you play for the Chicago Bears. So they won't be looking for much motivation to go up there and prove to everybody that they're kind of team, even though it's kind of late in the year and the stats are really bad. But can we improve and can we keep playing better? And it looks like Mitch Trubisky is really focused. I mean, even last night on the podium, the things he was saying, and one thing I heard from the locker room that you kind of you always wait to hear, right, is the young running back said, look, we got to get better. I owe this to the O-line, and we're just following our leader, Mitch Trubisky. And when guys start saying things like that, you realize they're all coming together in that locker room, all getting behind their quarterback, and he's leading them. So it's one game, and you're hoping that the Lions and Blau, I don't know how they pull one out, but that would be amazing. But and, you know, you hope the Seahawks beat the Rams, but all you can do is beat the Packers and control what you do.
And let's just play it forward. Suppose they do finish 10-6 and they don't make the playoffs. Does that make it a successful season? Does that
you gotta ruin Christmas, huh, Molly?
That's what I do.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Obviously, the goal this year was the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the kind of team they thought they had. I mean, and they have not played well on offense. And we all know that one game doesn't cover up that stench. But man, it was fun to watch. You know, and like I said, as a guy who watches the Bears to analyze them, and for the fans all there. There hasn't been a lot of touchdowns in those end zones on the lakefront. So are we saying that they've cured everything? No, that's not what we're saying. But it was good to watch. And, you know, if you take a realistic look at it, it was kind of a perfect defense for where the offense was, because they were always just going to line up and they're going to do exactly what you think they're going to do. So they get a big test against Green Bay. Not a great defense, but I mean just scheme-wise, because with Pettin, you don't know where they're going to line up. You don't know what they're going to do, and they're going to throw all kind of things at you. So the total opposite coming up for the Bears in their next game.
Olin, was that a purple sport coat last night?
That was the Washington Huskies Hall of Fame sports coat.
Snazzy.
They won the Apple Cup. Chris Peterson stepped down, so I just want to, you know, thank him and wear my coat. And I don't know if you saw Alex Brown put on the Mitch Trubisky jersey, you know, so he's been supporting him, I guess, all of a sudden. So yes, I appreciate you bringing that up. I wanted to just pay respects to my alma mater.
Sharp-dressed man.
Yeah, beautiful.
Thanks,
Olin.
Olin,
thank you.
Good stuff.
And bah humbug. Bah humbug to you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. That's Olin Kreutz live, brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Built Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. 312-644-6767. We'll get to your calls next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Oh, it's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.